Candy from Strangers by Mark Coggins is original, smart, and good to the last page, says best-selling author and executive producer of the hit TV series Bosch, Michael Connelly. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 12. You Only Hurt the Ones You Hug. This time the words fruit salad did not cross Ellen Stockwell's lips when she greeted me at the door. That was just as well, because I wasn't sure how she and Chris were going to get on, and he might have taken it as a crack. As it turned out, I needn't have worried. Ellen, I said, I'd like you to meet Chris Duckworth. He's the computer expert I mentioned on the phone. Ellen gave Chris her friendly gap-toothed smile and reached out to take his hand. Thank you for coming. I love your suit, by the way. Is it textured linen? Chris glared at me from under his eyebrows. Yes, it is, he said. Good of you to notice. A lot of people don't appreciate textured fabrics. I'm sure it's just ignorance. She led us into the living room and stood by the Swedish, complete assembly required entertainment center Kuhn bookshelf that dominated the back wall. She was dressed casually in jeans and a pullover sweater, but still managed to project a slim elegance. A smell of steam and hot fabric came from the back of the house, where I guess she'd been ironing. Can I get you anything? No thanks, I said. I'm going to get Chris started on Carolyn's computer, and then you and I can talk about what I found out so far. She clasped her hands in front of her. Good. I'm encouraged you have news for us so quickly. I held my face in a neutral expression that felt stiff and phony. The news wasn't going to be any too encouraging when they got it. Is the lieutenant here then?
He's taking a nap like before, but I think it's best if you and I talk separately. I can pass everything on.
Works for me.
Good. Please go on back. I'll be in the sewing room when you need me.
Chris and I went past her to Carolyn's bedroom. He whistled in mock appreciation when he got a peek at the decor and the mood lighting. Transylvania meets the Orient with a bit of auto repair shop thrown in. He pointed at the Jim Morrison poster. I do like Jim's pants, though. There's a surprise. He moved over to the computer desk and switched on the lamp. And I recognized a Chinese screen from the pictures on her website. She used it as a backdrop for a lot of the stills and the webcam stuff. I grunted my agreement. What do you think about the computer? Are you going to be able to get around the password protection? Let's see what OS she's got on it. He pressed the power button and the machine began to whir softly. A moment later, a Microsoft XP logo snapped onto the screen. XP. It could be very easy if she hasn't set the administrator's password. We can log in as the admin and remove the password to her regular account. If she has said it, I'll just have to use some of the tools in my little bag of tricks. He held up a canvas bag of CDs and floppy disks he had brought. 10 minutes tops, either way. I sat on the futon and watched while Chris did his magic. It turned out to be as easy as predicted. Before the computer finished booting, he hit one of the function keys along the top of the keyboard. He put the computer into something called safe mode and logged on as the administrator, without having to enter a password. After he removed the password for her regular account, he started the computer again. There you go. We're logged in as Goth Angel and we have access to everything on the computer. I stood to get a closer look. Including email? Chris clicked on the icon for Carolyn's mail program. After a moment's pause, it loaded in the middle of the screen, partly obscuring the black and white photo of a cemetery angel on her desktop. The program said there were 157 messages in her inbox, but almost immediately another dialogue popped up to tell us that the program was downloading 452 more. I tapped the screen. What's going on? Cable modem. It gives her always-on access to the internet. She'd need something like that for the webcam or it would be too slow. The program is getting all the mail she missed while she's been gone. The inbox filled with messages the way a stopped-up sink fills with water. I recognized some of the names from her guestbook. But there were a lot of new ones, and it was clear it was going to take a very long time to wade through them. We'll be here all day.
Yep. Sounds like we should make our order to go. He reached into his bag to take out a package of CDs.
Let's burn some CDs with the stuff we want, and I can take a look at it later at home.
Great. But how do we know what's important?
Shouldn't be that hard. We'll get all the email, including everything she's filed away in other folders. She must be staging the website on this computer, so we'll take a copy of that.
Wouldn't it be the same as what's out on the internet?
Probably, but there might be some new things she hasn't uploaded yet. We can also take any other interesting files I find, like word processing documents, bookmarks, or internet browsing history. And if I can find the password to her internet account, we might also be able to get access to the weblogs for her own site. They might tell us more about who's going there.
I knew there was a reason I hired you.
Chris pressed a button on the front of the computer. The CD drawer opened, and he dropped a blank disk onto the tray.
Now all you need is a reason to pay me.
I wouldn't want to spoil your unemployment eligibility. I'm going to talk to Ellen. I went back up the hall to the sewing room, which was between Carolyn's and the master bedroom. It had obviously been Quentin Jr.'s when he was alive, and a number of the furnishings, the double bed, a bookcase full of comic books, a framed varsity letter and track, and a Union City High School pennant dated from his occupancy. Ellen had put a flouncy yellow comforter on the bed, added some matching throw pillows, and moved in a small desk and a sewing machine. I had to duck between a tension rod full of perfectly ironed shirts and pants hanging in the doorway to enter. The ironing board was set up at the foot of the bed, and Ellen looked up and smiled as she ran the iron over the back pockets of a pair of khaki pants.
"Sorry about the laundry," she said. "We could talk in the living room if you like."
"This is fine." I nodded at the ironing board. "I can never get the pockets right. They always look like the Shroud of Turin when I'm done."
She laughed. "The trick is to turn the pants pockets inside out. But I don't imagine you spend much time ironing your pants."
"That bad?"
"No, I meant that you probably have them done."
I sat down on the edge of the bed. "You're right. There's a dry cleaner's on the first floor of my building."
"There is one thing, though, if you don't mind my mentioning it."
"What?"
"You have grass stains on your suit coat from when you tussled with Quentin. You ought to have that dry cleaned soon or they may never come out."
I grinned. "At least I don't smell of tequila."
"Well, maybe a little. I think some of it must have gotten on your coat."
She glanced quickly at me and then took a deep interest in aligning the inseams of the pants. I held the lapel of my jacket to sniff at it, but the odor eluded me.
Ellen laughed. "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you feel uncomfortable."
"Don't worry about it." I took the suit coat off and laid it on the bed.
"Look, Ellen, speaking of uncomfortable, I need to tell you something about Carolyn that I don't think you know."
She stopped with the iron mid-stroke.
"What is it?"
I held up my hands. "It's nothing bad in and of itself, but I think it could be related to her disappearance. She has a website."
"A website?"
"Have you read those articles about teenage girls and young women who put up sites about themselves? They usually have pictures, diaries, and sometimes live video. I think even Mike Doonesbury's daughter had one in the comic strip."
She set the iron down with exaggerated care. "Cam sites is what they call them, and most of them aren't as innocent as the one in the comic strip. What are you telling me? Was Carolyn posing nude on the internet?"
"No, she wasn't. But it's a little more complicated than that. There are actually two sites, Carolyn's and Monica's. Carolyn's is pretty tame, but..."
Without waiting for me to finish, she dodged out from behind the ironing board and shot under the laundry in the doorway. She was all the way to Carolyn's room by the time I got up from the bed and poked my head out to look. I started to follow, but I heard her say, "Show me," to Chris in a sharp voice, and I lost my nerve. It would be hard enough for her to look at it without me standing over her shoulder. I went back into the room and shut off the iron. I didn't think laundry was going to be a priority any longer. I returned to my seat on the bed and sorted my fingers for what seemed like 15 minutes. Then I saw her go past, towards the kitchen, and a minute later she came back into the room, dabbing at her red-rimmed eyes with a paper towel. She flopped down next to me and we sat side by side without saying anything, or even looking at each other. Suddenly the will seemed to drain out of her, and she slumped back into the pillows, sobbing as she stared at the ceiling. I felt about as useless as a conductor on a museum train.
"I know it's a hard thing to discover about Carolyn," I said finally, "but it does represent progress in the investigation. We may be able to find a link between her disappearance and someone who visited the site. There was a stirring beside me, but no other response. Ellen,
what do you want me to say? That I'm happy to hear that my daughter may have been abducted by some weirdo she met over the internet?
Her voice was hard and raspy. I patted the bed between us, still somehow reluctant to look at her, and even more reluctant to touch her.
We don't know that. It could be that she went off on her own volition, or it could be the site has nothing to do with anything. I need to pursue it, though, and I need for you to be aware that I'm pursuing it.
Consider me aware. Consider me painfully aware. She blew her nose quietly. I've learned more about my daughter in the last few days than I learned in the last few years, and I'm starting to get a picture of myself as a mother that's not very flattering.
Look, I only know as much about your life as you told me, but it seems to me that you've had more than your share of crises. Given everything you've had to deal with, it's not surprising that you have a less than perfect knowledge of your daughter's life. Besides, she's over 18. You can't control her any longer. She's going to do many things that you won't know about, much less approve of. That's all part of the package.
The silence that followed seemed to swallow up my rejoinder. I had the odd feeling that I hadn't spoken at all, merely thought the words. Then there was a little sniff beside me.
You're a very kind man, August, she said softly, but you're a liar. I've ignored Carolyn, and Quentin too. After our son died, I just went through the motions. I'm like one of those books you buy in stationery stores that are all blank inside. It's up to you to fill them in, but I no longer have the energy.
I finally turned to look at her, but as I did, I caught a blur of motion by the door. Chris had thrust his head between a cambric shirt and a second pair of khaki pants. He mouthed the words, "I'll wait in the car," and pointed down the hallway. I nodded and waved him on. Ellen sighed heavily and pushed herself up from the pillows. The yellow fabric was tinged dark with her tears.
How do you like the middle-aged melodramatics? You must rue the day I walked into your office.
I might have rued it, to use your melodramatic term, the day it happened, but I haven't since. I smiled and reached over to smooth a strand of hair from her face. We looked at each other like we shared a guilty secret. Then, impulsively, she put her arms around me. I pulled her to her feet, enfolding her in an embrace whose ardor surprised the both of us. Her head felt just right against my shoulder, her breasts warm and soft against my chest. It was like coming in from the storm. She turned her face up to me. I kissed her tentatively, then a long, slow, deliberate kiss that didn't fool around. Her mouth opened and she entwined a leg around my calf, pressing her pelvis against mine. We held the clutch until I thought I would pass out or spontaneously combust, and then a shiver ran through her and she drew her head away.
"What do I do, August?" she whispered.
I made a shishing noise and pulled her closer, but suddenly her body went rigid in my arms. She pushed me away, a look of absolute despair in her eyes. I forced myself to look up to the door, knowing all the while what I would see. Stockwell peered at us from between the laundry. He cleared his throat wearily.
"So that's the way it is."
He disappeared from view and bumped his way down the hall. A moment later, the door to the master bedroom pulled shut with a dry click.
"Oh, Jesus," said Ellen.
She stood stock still, a terrified spectator to an automobile wreck. I reached for her, but she twisted away. She put her hands out in a stay-back gesture.
"You've got to leave," she said, "right now."
"But Ellen, I can't leave you alone with him. He might hurt you."
"That's his right. He's my husband. You're an employee."
Her chest heaved in a panic breath that bordered on hyperventilation.
"Please leave us."
"Don't be ridiculous. A marriage license isn't carte blanche for abuse."
"Go," she wailed. "Just go."
I nodded without saying anything and dragged myself away from there. I felt like a rusty nail in a piece of scrap wood.
You have been listening to Candy from Strangers, a book Mystery Scene Magazine described as crackling and whip smart. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.